Southwestern Manitoba is an international center for pig farming and food processing. The Maple Leaf plant in Brandon is Canada's largest hog processing plant with more than 2,000 workers. And in Nipawa, the High Life plant employs more than 500 workers. Sheldon Burney is a local writer who recently wrote about hog plants and foreign workers for both Briar Patch magazine and The Dominion. And he joins me now in the studio. Welcome, Sheldon.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. One area that you focused in your articles was the changing workforce at the hog processing plants, especially over the last decade. Can you talk about who's now working at these plants in southwestern Manitoba?
Yeah, for the most part, the workforce, so the people who are doing, you know, doing the cuts and stuff on the floor, are generally temporary foreign workers, and that's because as the plants kind of opened up, they kind of went through the local workforce who were willing to work for not a lot above minimum wage, you know, and, it, you know, you're working 40 hours a week, kind of. I mean, the temperatures aren't what they used to be in the, you know, when Upton Sinclair wrote about hog processing, but at the same time, it is very monotonous, repetitive work, and the wages aren't very high. So pretty quickly, both Brandon and Nipawa were kind of unable to fill the demand for labor locally, so they applied to the Temporary Foreign Worker Program, which is a federal program that lets employers, in this case Maple Leaf and High Life, bring in temporary foreign workers from abroad. A lot of we're finding a lot of workers are from the Philippines or Latin America, and so that's what the bulk of the workforce is at these plants.
And through that program, you are tied to the job. Is that how you come over?
Yes. As part of the program, you're coming to fill that position and that position only. And in, I think the case is pretty similar in Brandon and Nipawa, where you've got about a two-year contract. And kind of the, beyond sending money home to your family, the draw is that after those 2 years, you can apply to become a landed resident. And so the dream there would be to come and finally immigrate to Canada, but to do so, you've got to sign on to do your first 6 months and then your full 2 years work at these plants. And then beyond that, if you make it through that and you're okay, then you're cleared to get landed immigrant status.
Since the hog plants have moved the workforce away from domestic workers more towards foreign workers, have the contracts changed in terms of the wages or the benefits that workers receive?
Well, I believe UFCW is a pretty strong union, and so they've actually been pretty successful at getting a lot of rights for temporary foreign workers that are unheard of elsewhere in Canada, like the Brandon plant, all the kind of union documents and the collective agreement is translated into four different languages, which was a first in Canada. But as far as wages go, the wages, you know, they're essentially the same or less than they were, you know, 30 years ago for the same job. And, you know, so that's, they're not making a whole lot of money relative to what the job once had for workers.
And what are the working conditions like?
Well, most of them are pretty unskilled positions. Like, there are skilled positions in there where you need some form of meat cutting or meat packing skills, but a lot of them are very redundant sort of work. Like, it's an assembly line, essentially. So some jobs are just really moving one piece of pork, like a loin or some other bit, just kind of positioning it for the next person to do the specialized cut. So a lot of it is extremely routine kind of work. There's other people who are just washing trays out, you know, washing bloody trays out and that sort of thing. Because it is a meat packing plant, the temperature is kept pretty low so that meat doesn't spoil, that sort of thing, so that bacteria doesn't grow. So that's about the temperature of a fridge. So you're essentially working in a refrigerator for your entire day, and, you know, you're on your feet 8 hours doing the same kind of thing. So again, it's not like there's Upton Sinclair described that in the jungle years ago, these horrendous conditions. That wouldn't be the case. From all accounts, these plants are world-class facilities. It's just that the jobs are extremely mundane and repetitive, and, you know, when you're doing one cut or one thing for 8 hours a day, you often get kind of a workplace like injuries that happen from doing the same motion all the time, whether that's lifting with one side of your body for 8 hours a day or what. So those things are certainly an issue for workers.
And imagine with that type of work, if you're looking at Canadian workers or workers that have more options, that it would make sense that you'd probably have to pay a premium to get people to stay, or you'd have a trouble with retention. But when you have a program like this where people don't have a choice, it must be very good for the companies that that they have workers then who have to stay or risk losing their residency.
That's one of the main reasons why the at least First Maple Leaf and likely High Tech as well, or High Life, went with the temporary foreign worker program is because it, like I said, they kind of has exhausted the people in the local community who were willing to kind of do that. You know, for a while they had just real bad retention numbers, you know, like when the plant was starting up in the late 90s, early 2000s, you couldn't keep many workers more than 3 or 4 months. I mean, the pay was, you know, relatively good compared to a lot of other kind of like, I mean, compared to a McDonald's or something. So they had a lot of young guys, a lot of young folks, you know, around 20-something, wanted to make money over the summer through the winter. But after a couple months of, you know, freezing and moving one pig leg in one direction for the whole time, they, you know, a lot of people were just quitting. Which is, you know, it's a huge benefit for the employer to be able to lock down workers into a, whether it's a 6 month or a 2 year contract, because that has really solved their turnover problem for sure.
You talked about UFCW, the union that represents mm-hmm. the workers, and how they've done really good things about getting contract in different languages. And I know they've been quite active in workers' education about their rights, but I imagine for a lot of workers, even if they know their rights, it's still really hard to exercise them if there is a problem because they are dependent on the company. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone who's working towards change of the employment and the immigration system that's bringing them here, you know, as what you could call indentured labor, that mm-hmm. that they are workers without much ability to exercise the rights that they may have?
Well, there are certainly groups that are very critical of the system for sure. And there's activists that are working towards, you know, kind of improving the working conditions or improving the contract kind of conditions. But a lot of that is focused on, let's say, workers like agricultural migrant workers who don't have the benefit of a union. So, I mean, while there's still a lot to be done for, let's say, meatpackers in the temporary foreign worker program, compared to a lot of other migrant workers in Canada or other temporary workers there, they're really lucky to have such a strong union as UFCW, even if they are kind of signing these restrictive contracts. But yeah, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag in that regard. They've got a really progressive union, which is better than a lot of folks do. But at the same time, they still are working within this system. And the worker, like the temporary foreign worker system, is a federal kind of federal legislation, federal program. So to get any real change affected, it would have to be like a national kind of movement to do it, you know, like there might be, you know, kind of special, not special interests, but special things that, let's say, workers in Manitoba might be looking for, but in a different province where there's, you know, not quite the same demands, you know, I mean, Manitoba's a high exporter of pork products. So really, I think Quebec is the only one of the provinces who exports more. So to try to get the same kind of grievances across the board is probably going to be pretty tough, and it would take some sort of national kind of push to really affect change with the program.
Yeah, and yeah, I know a lot of, you know, areas, it's good that you pointed out, it's not just meat processing, mm-hmm. it is agriculture and domestic workers mm-hmm. are brought over that, and mm-hmm. The tar sands as well employs yeah. a lot. Were you able to speak to any of the workers in doing research for the articles you wrote?
No, I was able to speak with a couple people who had moved through the program and who now have other jobs, but no one currently working either at High Life or at Maple Leaf were willing to comment on record. And with High Life and Neepawa, you know, I would try to communicating with people who I know through family out there, as well as people who are working in the office there, the immigration office, and no one was willing to speak on record about it, just because, you know, they might not have even had anything to complain necessarily about, but, you know, the thought of going on record and then getting sent back or getting your contract terminated or then not being moved, let's say, forward to the landed immigrant program is a real fear for workers, because the reason they're here is to make money and to send it home, or in a lot of cases, especially with the meatpacking, is to immigrate to Canada, and anything that might jeopardize that is definitely, you know, it's not a risk that many people are willing to take, even if it's maybe not even a real risk, but just the fear of that, I think, is really strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot on the line for mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, for sure.
I also wanted to talk about the impact of the hog industry on the region. And, you know, with a lot of hog processing plants, I imagine there's going to be a lot of demand for hogs mm-hmm. From there. Is this benefiting farmers in southwestern Manitoba?
Well, that's certainly arguable. I mean, from the hog industry's perspective, I think they would say for sure, because we're You know, most of the hogs that are processed in Nipawa and Brandon are sourced from Manitoba, with a little, like, you know, maybe one out of five coming from eastern Saskatchewan. So for kind of a regional economic development at a big scale, it kind of looks that way. But I think when you're looking at small individual rural communities, it kind of has a different story, in that most of these hogs are being sourced from really large, intensive livestock operations, are often referred kind of disparagingly as factory farms, where you've got, I think, 50% of the hogs from Maple Leaf are sourced from operations housing over 5,000 hogs, so really large industrialized systems. So while at one point in the past, maybe, you know, in the 80s or even certainly before then, you would have 5,000 hogs probably coming from 100 different farms, you know, who all had relatively small operations where maybe they had 100 head hog or a couple hundred, whereas now you've got one farmer, which doesn't really require that many workers to do it. A lot of it's very automated. The environment's very controlled so that, you know, pigs aren't getting sick. It's kept, you know, the feed, the temperature, all that is very controlled with computers and everything. So the amount of people that are getting employed by that system is a lot smaller than it would have been 20 years ago. So you're finding a lot of small rural communities are just struggling because all these things are kind of stacked up against them. The jobs are kind of situated on one little area instead of a bunch of farmers getting economic benefit from selling their hogs. You've got large industrialized farms making money, which again, as the industry as a whole, it looks good. But I think on the ground in rural communities, you're seeing a different story.
And it must be fairly risky for the region as well to have so much of your economy tied to pork, to one product.
Certainly, yeah. If for some reason a lot of the pork, which is processed at Maple Leaf, is for export, if all of a sudden, let's say, somewhere like South Korea recently and Canada have been kind of back and forth on free trade regulations, if all of a sudden they stop buying Canadian pork, that's a huge blow to the market because a lot of our exports are going there. Same way, you know, you see in any kind of industry that kind of lumps all your eggs in one basket, it's dangerous. It might not, you know, go down the tubes right away, but there's certainly a potential if we saw that happen with cattle in Manitoba or across the board in Canada in, you know, just in 2003 with BSE. All of a sudden, you know, tons of farmers were just crippled economically because they had invested so much into exporting beef, and then all of a sudden when the borders were closed south of the, you know, down to the States, a lot of farmers really lost out big time. So there's always that potential of relying heavily on one industry driving your economy the way that Nipawa and Brandon are doing right now.
Lastly, I wanted to ask you the social impacts of a region that probably traditionally has had much slower population growth, and although it's not culturally homogenous, it has probably been less culturally diverse. What has been the impact of having suddenly a lot of foreign workers who don't have citizenship coming into the community?
I believe generally people are pretty positive about it because it really is, like, we've seen enrollment in schools, particularly in Nipawa, kind of bottom out or start to kind of dwindle over the years, you know, and even Brandon, it kind of had reached a very plateau where without, you know, an influx of students somewhere, you know, services were kind of starting to dry up here and there. But, you know, with a bunch of families moving into the area, this has been great for the community. And like you mentioned, while, you know, some of these communities had been more culturally homogenous over the years, I think it's really a benefit for these communities to be having such an influx of workers from different parts of the world. You know, we've seen in Brandon, like a trip to the superstore 10 years ago would have been like any other superstore, but now it's, you hear like 6 or 7 different languages being spoken. It's great for the community. They're folk kind of days. They have a winter kind of festival similar to Folklorama, and I think this year they had 3 or 4 new pavilions that had never been in there. So for people living in Brandon, it's great because it's finally breathing some life into the community that wasn't there before. And I think in that regard, it's definitely positive for the region. So you see a kind of this weird mix of positive and negative kind of impacts of this thing, whether you're focusing on Brandon particularly or a larger region. But yeah, it's definitely interesting in that regard.
Great. Well, thanks for coming in and talking about it today.
Yeah, thank you.
I've been speaking to Sheldon Burney. He's the author of 2 articles, Living the High Life, How Meatpackers Are Fueling Migration to Manitoba Towns, and that you can read in Briar Patch, and that's briarpatchmagazine.com, and of Hogtown, Manitoba, and that's in the Dominion, and you can find that at dominionpaper.ca. And you're listening to Mud and Water, mudandwater.org on CKUW 95.9 FM.